Hello, welcome to the Front Pages. I'm Chris Kelly, and today I'm reading from the Monday, October 18th, 2021 editions of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times. Looking at the photographs on the front page of the Times this morning, there's a picture of the Cheat River, which is in West Virginia. It kind of snakes around the town of Rollsburg in an oxbow shape. And the caption tells us that raw sewage spills into the river during heavy storms. And it's part of a story about Senator Manchin blocking the climate change aspect of the bill, or the one that would do away with fossil fuels, and how his vote is threatening his hometown. There's also a picture of several people sitting around a table in a Chinese restaurant eating with chopsticks as part of a story how an Asian influx is reshaping a corner of New York and Queens. First story of the morning, public health crisis grows with distrust and threats. As she leaves for work, Dr. Allison Berry keeps a vigilant eye on her rearview mirror, watching the vehicles around her, weighing if she needs to take a different route home, and she must make sure nobody finds out where she lives. When the pandemic first hit the northern edge of Washington's Olympic Peninsula, Dr. Berry was a popular family physician and local health officer, trained in biostatistics and epidemiology at Johns Hopkins University. She processed COVID test kits in her garage and delivered supplies to people in quarantine, leading a mobilization that kept her counties with some of the fewest deaths in the nation. But this summer, as a Delta variant wave pushed case numbers to alarming levels, Dr. Berry announced a mask mandate. In September, she ordered vaccination requirements for indoor dining. By then, too many in the community, the enemy was not the virus, it was her. Dr. Berry should be attacked on site, one resident wrote online. Someone else suggested bringing back public hangings. Dr. Berry, we are coming for you, a man warned at a public meeting. An angry crowd swarmed into the courthouse during a briefing on the COVID response one day, looking for her. And protesters also showed up at her house until they learned that Dr. Berry was no longer living there. The places where it is most needed to put in more stringent measures, it's the least possible to do it, Dr. Berry said, either because you're afraid you're going to get fired or you're afraid you're going to get killed, or both. State and local public health departments across the country have endured not only the public's fury, but widespread staff defections, burnout, firings, unpredictable funding, and a significant erosion of their authority to impose the health orders that were critical to America's early response to the pandemic. While the coronavirus has killed more than 700,000 in the United States in nearly 2 years, a more invisible casualty has been the nation's public health system. Already underfunded and neglected even before the pandemic, public health has been further undermined in ways that could resound for decades to come. A New York Times review of hundreds of health departments in all 50 states indicates that local public health across the country is less equipped to confront a pandemic now than it was in the beginning of 2020. We have learned all the wrong lessons from the pandemic, said Adrian Casalotti, chief of public and government affairs for the National Association of County and City Health Officials, an organization representing the nearly 3,000 local health departments across the nation. We are attacking and removing authority from the people who are trying to protect us. The Times interviewed more than 140 local health officials, public health experts, and lawmakers, reviewed new state laws, analyzed local government documents, and sent a survey to every county health department in the country. Almost 300 departments responded, discussing their concerns over long-term funding, staffing, authority, and community support. The examination showed that public health agencies have seen a staggering exodus of personnel, many exhausted and demoralized, in part because of abuse and threats. Dozens of departments reported that they had not staffed up at all, but actually lost employees. About 130 said they didn't have enough people to do contact tracing, one of the most important tools for limiting the spread of the virus. The Times identified more than 500 top health officials who left their jobs in the last 19 months. Two, legislators have approved more than 100 new laws, with hundreds more under consideration, that limit state and local health powers. That overall of Public Health gives governors, lawmakers, and county commissioners more power to undo health decisions and undermines everything from flu vaccination campaigns to quarantine protocols for measles. 3. Large segments of the public have also turned against agencies voting in new local government leaders who ran on pledges to rein in public health departments. In Idaho, commissioners last month appointed a new physician representative to the health board in the Boise region who advocates unapproved treatments for COVID-19 and refers to coronavirus vaccinations as needle rape. "We have heard from the voters," Ryan Davidson, one of the commissioners, said. 4. Billions of dollars have been made available to public health by the federal government, but most of it has been geared toward stemming the emergency rather than hiring permanent staff or building long-term capability. Most of the departments that responded to the Time survey said they were worried about their funding levels, which in most cities or most cases had been decreased or flat before the pandemic. About 36 departments said their budgets were the same or smaller than they were at the beginning of the pandemic. There are already signs that the growing shortfalls in public health could have lasting impacts beyond the pandemic. More than 220 departments told the Times that they had to temporarily or permanently abandon other health public health functions to respond to the pandemic, leading to a spike in drug overdoses and a disturbing drop in reports of child abuse. Several health officials pointed to runaway infections of sexually transmitted diseases, with gonorrhea cases doubling and syphilis on pace to triple in one county in Pennsylvania. Oswego County, New York, recorded a surge of lead poisoning. In Texas, requests for exemptions to the usual suite of required childhood immunizations have risen sharply. Mandates and mobilizations to protect public health have long been part of American life. Colonists issued quarantine laws and fines for disobeying them as early as the 1700s. Public health departments later delivered vaccines to halt diseases like smallpox and polio, upgraded water supplies to limit typhoid and cholera, curbed sexually transmitted diseases, and helped guarantee the safety of food in restaurants. But not since the flu pandemic of 1918 had the country faced a disease outbreak that called for unelected health officials to impose widespread mask mandates and business closures. As scientists help overcome many infectious diseases, the focus on keeping Americans healthy turned more to individualized treatment for ailments like heart disease and cancers, said David Rosner, a historian at Columbia University who specializes in the history of public health. Many, particularly in conservative circles, have increasingly embraced individual rights over collective responsibilities, a trend that Dr. Rosner said was undercutting the notion of a social contract in which people work together to achieve a greater good. "It's a depressing moment," he said. "What makes a society if you can't even get together around keeping your people healthy?" During the pandemic, the federal government made tens of billions of dollars available to bolster testing, contact tracing, and vaccinations. In May, the Biden administration announced that it would invest an additional $7.5 billion from the COVID stimulus package to train and recruit public health workers. But while health officials described the money as critical to helping them quickly build out teams after years of budget cuts, many of those new hires were temporary workers, and much of the spending went to urgent needs such as testing and vaccinations. The new funding often came rooted through states or grant programs with conditions like a short time frame for spending money or time-consuming requirements for state and county approvals. Some departments said they had to lay off employees at inopportune times over the last year because grants had run out of money. When the pandemic struck last year, Dr. Jennifer McKinney, the top public health officer for Wilson County, Kansas, began doing Facebook Live presentations and coordinated with hospitals, schools, and churches. She helped implement a state lockdown, but when it came time to reopen businesses, she did it more slowly than her county commissioners desired. The Kansas City State Legislature, alarmed by the persistence and power of public health orders around the state, passed a series of laws that gutted the authority of public health officials like Dr. McKinney. The new laws limited COVID-19 contact tracing, gave authority for health decisions to elected leaders, and allowed anyone aggrieved by a mask mandate, business closure, or limit on public gatherings the ability to sue the agencies that imposed the order. It was a huge slap in the face to all of us who are doing the public health work, Dr. McKinney said. The Wilson County commissioners, emboldened with new powers over much of what she does, have discussed replacing Dr. McKinney, saying she focused too much on health and not enough on businesses. The public grew so hostile toward her that she at one point had her elementary age children sit away from the windows when they did their homework. New laws passed in at least 32 states similarly restrict the ability of health officials to impose mask and vaccine mandates, close churches, schools, and businesses, conduct contact tracing, or apply penalties for violating health restrictions. Some limit the length of time that governor's emergency orders can be in effect. Many require a legislative body to approve health orders. The Times spoke with dozens of lawmakers who have introduced such legislation, most of them who shared a concern that health officials had overstepped their authority and required a check on that power. Citing Florida law, Governor DeSantis' government, which has been aggressive in slapping down local restrictions, fined Leon County $3.5 million this month for mandating COVID vaccinations for its employees, $5,000 for each person required to get a shot. The state has threatened to levy millions of dollars more in fines for similar county mandates. In Bismarck, North Dakota, the state capital, the health director credited a mask mandate last year with curbing a devastating outbreak. Cases have recently surged again, but a new state law bars the state government from requiring masks. And that story goes on even longer. Blocking climate change with hometown at risk. In Senator Joe Manchin's hometown, a flood-prone hamlet of about 200 homes that hugs a curve in a shallow creek, the rain is getting worse. Those storms swell the river, called Buffalo Creek, inundating homes along its banks. They burst the streams that spill down the hills on either side of the former coal mining town, pushing water into basements. They saturate the ground, seeping into Farmington's aging pipes and overwhelming its sewage treatment system. Climate change is warming the air, allowing it to hold more moisture, which causes more frequent and intense rainfall. And no state in the contiguous United States is more exposed to flood damage than West Virginia, according to data released last week. From the porch of his riverfront house, Jim Hill, who is married to Joe Manchin's cousin, recounted how rescue workers got him and his wife out of their house with a rope during the flood in 2017. He described helping his neighbors, Mr. Manchin's sister and brother-in-law, clear out their basement when a storm would come. He calls local officials when he smells raw sewage in the river. These last few years here in West Virginia have had unbelievable amounts of rain, Mr. Hall said. We've seriously considered not staying. Mr. Manchin, a Democrat whose vote is crucial to passing his party's climate legislation, is opposed to its most important provision that would compel utilities to stop burning oil, coal, and gas, and instead use solar, wind, and nuclear energy, which do not emit the carbon dioxide that is heating the planet. Last week, the senator made his opposition clear to the Biden administration, which is now scrambling to come up with alternatives he would accept. Mr. Manchin has rejected any plan to move the country away from fossil fuels because he said it would harm West Virginia, a top producer of coal and gas. Mr. Manchin's own finances are tied to coal. He founded a family coal brokerage that paid him $500,000 in dividends last year. But when it comes to climate, there's also an economic toll from inaction. New data shows that Mr. Manchin's constituents stand to suffer disproportionately as climate change intensifies. Unlike those in other flood-exposed states, most residents in mountainous West Virginia have little room to relocate from the waterways that increasingly threaten their safety. Adding to the problem, West Virginia officials have struggled to better protect residents despite a surge of federal money. They point to a reluctance among state officials to even talk about climate change and to housing that is not built for the challenge, leaving West Virginia less able than other parts of the country to adapt. The measure that Mr. Manchin opposes, a clean electricity program, may be the last chance for Congress to reduce planet warming emissions before the effects of climate change become catastrophic. A clean electricity program would reward utilities that switch from burning coal, gas, and oil to using wind, solar, and nuclear energy and penalize those that don't. It's designed to get 80% of the country's electricity from clean resources by 2030, up from 40% now. A spokeswoman for Mr. Manchin said the senator, quote, has long acknowledged the impacts of climate change in West Virginia. That is why he's worked hard to find a path forward on important climate legislation that maintains American leadership in energy innovation and critical energy reliability. Others say that by blocking efforts to reduce coal and gas use, Mr. Manchin risks hurting his state. The new flood data comes from the First Street Foundation, a nonprofit group that uses more granular techniques to gauge flood risk than the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The First Street measures risk not only from rivers, but also from smaller creeks and streams, the sort of waterways that expose towns like Farmington to too much flooding, yet are generally left off FEMA's flood maps. First Street calculated the portion of all kinds of infrastructure at risk of becoming inoperable because of a so-called 100-year flood, a flood that statistically has a 1% chance of happening in any given year. The group compared the results for every state except Alaska and Hawaii. In many cases, West Virginia topped the list. 61% of West Virginia's power stations are at risk, the highest nationwide, and more than twice the average. West Virginia also leads in the share of its roads at risk of inundation at 46%. Debate weighs the price of big bill versus not acting. As lawmakers debate how much to spend on President Biden's sprawling domestic agenda, they are really arguing about a seemingly simple issue, affordability. Can a country really already running in huge deficits afford the scope of spending that the president envisions? Or conversely, can it afford to wait to address large social, environmental, and economic problems that will accrue costs for years to come? It is a stealth battle over the fiscal future at a time when few lawmakers in either party have prioritized addressing debt and deficits. Each side believes in its approach would put the nation's finances on a more sustainable path by generating the strongest, most durable economic growth possible. The debate has shaped a discussion among lawmakers about what to prioritize as they scale back Mr. Biden's initial proposal to dedicate $3.5 trillion over 10 years to programs and tax cuts that would curb greenhouse gas emissions, make childcare more affordable, expand access to college, and lower prescription drug prices, among other priorities. The smaller bill under discussion could increase the total amount of government spending on all current programs by about 1.5% to 2.5% over the next decade, depending on the size of its components. Mr. Biden has proposed fully paying for it with a series of tax increases on businesses and the wealthy, including raising the corporate tax rate, increasing taxes on multinational corporations, and cracking down on wealthy people who evade taxes, along with reducing government spending on prescription drugs for older Americans. As the negotiations continue, Democrats are considering cutting back or jettisoning programs to share hundreds of billions of dollars off the final price to get to a number that can pass the House and Senate along party lines. One key part of Mr. Biden's climate agenda, the program to rapidly replace coal and gas-fired power plants, is likely to be dropped from the bill, as we already read. The discussions have focused attention on Washington's longstanding practice of using budgetary gimmicks to make programs appear to be paid for when they are not, as well as opening a new sort of discussion about what affordable really means. The debate about what the United States can afford used to be pegged to its growing budget deficits and warnings that the government, which spends much more than it brings in, could saddle future generations with mountains of debt, sluggish economic growth, runaway inflation, and enormous tax hikes. But those concerns receded after no such crisis materialized. The country experienced tepid inflation and low borrowing costs for a decade after the 2008 financial crisis, despite increased borrowing for economic stimulus under President Obama and for tax cuts under President Trump.